Today is the 6th of October, 2005, and I'm interviewing Paula Watry. And I'm in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and you are in Milwaukee?
That's correct.
And you spell your last name W-A-T-R-Y? Mm-hmm. Okay. So first, if you could tell me when and where you were born and raised.
I was born in Port Washington, Wisconsin. That's about 30 miles north of Milwaukee. And I was born January 30th, 1944. And I spent my life until high school graduation in Port Washington. For the most part, I've been in mostly Milwaukee since.
And are your parents from that area as well?
Yes. Now they're both expired.
What kind of work did they do when you were growing up?
Well, Mom was a homemaker.
Mm-hmm.
Dad was a railway postal clerk and a cabinet maker as well.
Oh, wow. Railway poster. Yeah. My dad was in the railroad business.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. He worked for a company that's now defunct called REA Express.
I see.
Yeah. So where did you get your interest in medicine and science? Was that...
You know, I'm not really sure where that came from. I was always good in the sciences in high school. I loved biology. And I don't remember how and when it occurred, but I did see, and I don't know if this was done to the career counselors in high school or what, but I did see a movie about operating room nurses somehow during my high school time. And plus, we lived quite close to the local hospital, a few blocks away. And so I worked there, first of all, in the dietary kitchen for about a year and a half or so. These were during my high school years. But then I did get a job as a nurse's aide in OBGYN, actually, again, in that small hospital. It was owned and run by nuns. And but I was permitted a lot of freedom. I mean, when I think back on that experience, now that would have been in the 50s. They had me giving ether during deliveries, and there were occasions when I was alone staffing the nursery. Sometimes I was alone staffing the postpartum unit. I could always access somebody, but in retrospect, I mean, you know, that would be illegal today. But I felt comfortable in that environment.
Yeah.
And I guess those things influenced my choice to go to nursing school, which is what I did first, right out of high school. And so I practiced as a nurse from 68 until 80, when I would have gone to my didactic PA program at Duke. But during my nursing years, I worked a lot in surgery. And so I really was influenced by that movie that I saw and worked in the OR for a lot of my time, including cardiac surgery, and was doing that. Actually, I did then spend a year in a cardiovascular surgical intensive care unit at a local huge hospital here in Milwaukee that did a lot of cardiac surgery right before I went to the PA program. And that's really when I was first exposed to the PA concept, because a lot of the cardiac surgeons were starting to hire them. And I just saw that as a step up, I guess, and just something giving me a little more autonomy. And I felt I could go directions as a PA that I couldn't as a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the kinds of things that influenced that decision. So then I went to the Duke PA program in 1980 through 1982.
Where did you go to nursing school?
St. Mary's School of Nursing here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. It actually no longer exists as a nursing school. It is still a hospital.
And was that a bachelor's degree?
No.
Or just an RN?
A diploma.
Uh-huh.
I did, however, immediately upon graduation, literally days after graduation from the nursing program, I did continue my education at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, and I do have a BS in zoology as well.
Oh, zoology, yes.
I would have liked biology, but they didn't. All they had was zoology and botany. And so, zoology was my choice. And I really, to be frank with you, had visions possibly of medical school. But that was a difficult time for me. I was working full-time in the operating room. I was working also as a teacher and assistant. I did a lot of babysitting on the side, and I was going to school full-time. And so I was sort of burned out by the time I finally graduated from there in 1968.
Mm-hmm. So were you married and had kids during this time as well?
No, I've been single all along.
And were you... You were an RN, and all those years was in surgery, 68 to 80?
Yes.
Okay. Mostly in cardiac?
Yes.
Okay. So you probably did a lot of first assist on...
I did, yes. A lot.
Were you mostly a scrub nurse, or are you circulating? Or
Mostly scrub nurse. I did circulate. I did handle. We had a third role, the medications and all the drugs that we used. I actually was instrumental in setting up two brand new cardiology surgical sections, one at St. Mary's,
mm-hmm.
And then also another at what was Mount Sinai Hospital here in Milwaukee at the time, and essentially took both from scratch. Of course, I knew more about cardiac surgery by the time I set up the second program.
And you said you also were a teaching assistant? Did you taught at the nursing school?
No, that's when I was at the University of Wisconsin.
Oh, okay. Okay. So then in 1980, you had found out about PAs through your work in surgery and
correct.
Decided to go to PA school. And why did you choose Duke?
Well, some of the players that I was exposed to here had graduated from Duke, and I was aware of its reputation. I did apply to both Duke and Emory, and actually was accepted at both, and so I was fortunate to have that I could make the choice. And I just really liked what I saw at Duke.
So what was your PA class like in terms of diversity and number?
And you mean what was the class like?
Yeah.
There were four of us nurses.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the person who was most removed from medicine was a kid who had a master's in English literature, I think. But he had worked as an EMT mm-hmm. for a year or two. And there were a few blacks in the class, as I recall. In fact, there was a black instructor at Duke, and his white wife happened to be our classmate. I can't remember too much about other backgrounds.
Was it mostly male or female?
Well, I feel like it was half and half.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember exact numbers.
So what part of PA school challenged you the most?
Well, of course, I was living away from home at the time. And I've always enjoyed going to school and taking exams. And I was comfortable enough in medicine / nursing that nothing scared me. And
yeah.
It's hard for me to say what I felt challenged me the most.
You knew a lot.
Probably pediatrics, as I reflect back, because
mm-hmm.
I just knew the least about them.
So you probably, in terms of the other people in your class, had more healthcare experience than...
I did have more background.
Yeah.
And I was a little older, I think, than the rest.
And you were 32?
I think I was pushing 40.
When you started PA school?
Yeah,
it's kind of like me.
A little more mature.
Yeah. So what was your first PA job like, and where was it?
I immediately went to a cardiac surgeon group and loved it and did that for about 3 years. And I just got burned out being on call all the time and really needed a change. And so I went into an administrative position then and stayed in that administrative position for a good number of years.
At the same surgeon?
No, for a hospital, for a different hospital.
Okay.
Yeah. I was privately employed by a cardiovascular surgeon for about 3 years.
And this was in Wisconsin?
Right here in Milwaukee.
Okay. And then after, how long did you do the administrative work?
Gosh, I think about 8 years.
And did you like that?
I did. I felt a little guilty, to be frank with you, that I wasn't practicing clinically. But I was enjoying what I was doing. The fact that I was a PA meant nothing in that particular position. Mm-hmm. In fact, it was in the same hospital at which I had originally established. That was the second cardiac surgical program that I established. And so I knew the hospital, and it was just a slightly different role. Not slightly. It was a different role.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that for those 8 years, and from there went to the Peace Corps.
Okay.
It's something I always wanted to do, and the hospital that I was at had merged with another hospital, and I was assigned to director positions in the cardiology program at the other hospital as well, and the physician group was had a lot of animosity towards each other, and just it ultimately wore on me, and it was just time for a change anyhow. And going to the Peace Corps was something I always wanted to do, and I discovered that I had no reason not to at the time.
Mm-hmm. So I want to get back to the Peace Corps in a few minutes because I have a lot of questions about that, but I did want to ask you a couple more questions about your first job.
Sure.
If you could tell me a little bit about, if you remember what your first day was like and how you were accepted by other people as a PA.
Well, I suppose my situation was a little different because I really knew all the players. And had already, as because I had been a surgical scrub nurse, all of those same people in that same hospital.
Yeah.
And in matter of fact, in multiple of the hospitals, because I used to, when I worked for the surgeon, I would go to the other hospitals that he went to as well. But I knew a lot of the players. In fact, one of the hospitals that we went to was the hospital at which I practiced as a cardiovascular ICU nurse.
That was St. Mary's?
That was at St. Luke.
Okay.
And I did that, which was for 1 year immediately prior to going to my PA program.
Okay. So what hospital did you mainly work at after you graduated? That was Mount Sinai?
We traveled. I was employed by the surgeon. And so we
traveled. Oh, you worked at several different hospitals.
Yes.
Okay.
Mount Sinai, St. Mary's, St. Luke's.
So those first 3 years when you were practicing, was there anything in particular or any type of case that challenged you the most?
Well, one of the surgeons here in Milwaukee was sort of a cutting-edge sort of guy and had developed quite a reputation for himself in terms of cardiac surgery. The name was Dudley Johnson. It's not who I worked primarily with, although as a scrub nurse prior to PA school, I had worked a lot with him. But the person that I was employed by as I first left PA school was a former partner of Dudley Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And Dudley Johnson had philosophies about doing surgical procedures and very high-risk people. And additionally, was known for accepting repeat procedures. And so those were always very difficult. They were always bloodier than, you know, primary surgical procedures, and they took forever. And it was just, those were always very lengthy cases and very challenging. So I'd probably put the redo, you know, coronary artery surgeries high on that list. There were also times when we would do carotid surgery in association with coronary artery surgery, and those mm-hmm. were always worrisome. Those kinds of combination procedures.
So do you remember a case or a patient that stood out in your mind when you were working as a PA?
Okay, I don't think I can.
That's okay.
I really don't think I can. Not there. I remember a different patient when I was still in the ICU as in functioning as a nurse.
Uh-huh.
That stood out, someone who had developed DIC, and it was just a horribly complicated case. But that was a different time in my life. I really can't think of any one person, you know, that was an especially challenging case. We did sometimes two and three a day, and I did that for 3 years, and I honestly cannot remember a specific case that stands out.
So what kind of populations did you like working with? Populations of people, any population in particular? Yeah, patients.
Well, of course, they all had coronary artery disease. Something I discovered about that environment is that it was just sort of canned, you know. A lot of those cases went the same way.
Mm-hmm.
It was only occasionally that there was an emergency or urgency that was different than we had run into previously. Most of them were men. Most of them were, you know, probably in their 50s and 60s. We did an occasional 80-year-old, and what always impressed me about them is it's almost like, you know, God sort of threw away the book with them, you know, when he made them. They just seemed stronger, and surgery seemed to bother them less than the younger people. And, you know, you don't get to know patients very well when you work in the OR.
Right.
And so I guess that's the best I can answer that particular question.
Did you miss not having more contact while the patient was awake?
No. I was too dumb to know that because I had worked in the operating room for such a large part of my life that I was really used to that. When we get to what I've done more recently, I'll go back to that. But at the time, I didn't realize I was missing anything.
Okay. Okay, so then, so 1982 to 85, you were at the, you were doing the cardiac surgery. And then 85 to, what, 93, I guess?
91.
You were doing administrative work. So then in you joined the Peace Corps in 1991?
Right.
So how long had you kind of thought about or envisioned yourself doing the Peace Corps? I mean, was it something from when you were a little girl?
Back to the 60s, probably, when JFK was president. And I sort of got caught by that bug then.
And so you just decided one day there was no reason for you not to join, and
right.
you
it's
did
something
it.
Something I always thought I would do after I retired. And it just really came to be time. It was just a lot many administrative changes. I reported to six different people in about a year and a half, I think, with the merger, and a lot of changes and a lot of upheaval. And we were, as part of the merger, we were taken over by a mother organization, and it happened to be the organization that ran St. Luke's Hospital, which was just a huge cardiovascular factory, for mm-hmm. lack of a better word. And so just everything was changing. It was just time. I had spent 8 years doing that. I was director of cardiology diagnostics at that time. And it was the time for me to make a change. And when I was trying to think of what to do next, I really was struck that I did not have any reason not to go to the Peace Corps then.
So how did that work? Did you join the Peace Corps as a PA that would contribute your skills?
No, I certainly was a PA, but I think they probably looked at my nurse history
mm-hmm.
Harder than the PA history.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure what all my options were. A couple months before I was offered the position in Jamaica, I was told that they were looking strongly at a position in Africa for me. I don't remember what they said it was, but in any event, eventually they offered me that position. And where they placed me initially was not at the university, which is where I met Darlene, but it was at the Blue Cross Blue Shield organization. And what they were interested in is that they wanted me to head up or to resume some health fairs that they previously had run in the country for high school students across the entire island. And it was hosted and funded by the Blue Cross Blue Shield organization. However, what happened is that, I don't know if you would be aware of this, but the requests are made by the nationals and by national organizations for Peace Corps help, but it might take 5 or 6 years for them to actually go through all the gymnastics to be an approved application by the Peace Corps, and then for the Peace Corps to sort of match an applicant to what they're asking for.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't happen overnight. And what had occurred is that the original request for the Peace Corps position had been made by Blue Cross Blue Shield just prior to Gilbert, the big hurricane that hit them, like in 1989, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was 89. And that just devastated Jamaica. And all organizations in Jamaica, non-government or otherwise, really, really struggled to recover. And there had been an administrative change at the Blue Cross organization from the time the original request occurred till the time I was placed in that position. And so it didn't take me real, real long once I was there, I'd say within about 3 or 4 months, to realize that the president, the current president of the Blue Cross Blue Shield organization, had absolutely zero plans to use me in the way in which they had originally requested.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just felt that the fit wasn't good, and I approached Peace Corps and asked if there was any chance that I could have a change of assignment. And it just so happens that another request in their books was from the University of the West Indies in Kingston, which is where we were based, and that they were interested. A person who had made a request for support was from the cardiology diagnostic unit at the University Hospital. And so it was just a glove that fit very well. And in less than a month after I made the request, I was actually on site at the university as a tutor. And they had, previously, they had a cardiac cath lab there, but their image intensifier had burned out when Gilbert blew through. And it had been a couple of years. The government was able to replace that image intensifier, and they were anxious to get their cath lab up and running again. When I got there, they had been doing open heart surgery, mostly valve. They have a lot of rheumatic history there. And so they were sometimes able to do that without heart lung pump. But believe it or not, they were actually using some high school students to teach them how to use the heart lung pump. And because of my past cardiac history, cardiac surgical history, it really was a good fit. And so I did start sort of a core didactic class for about 6 or 7 high school students that covered, you know, cardiac and respiratory anatomy and physiology with some renal thrown in as well. And I was just finishing off that course when Arlene came aboard. And she was the next perfect fit because she had had far more intensive care unit experience than I had. Plus, she had a master's in nursing education. And so in the meantime, they had purchased a new image intensifier. They were about to do their first cath in many, many years, cardiac cath. And they were about to start doing coronary artery surgery in their open heart surgical program. So it just was the right fit at the right time. And it was just a wonderful experience.
And how long were you there?
Actually, just shy of 3 years. What happened is that my father had died just a few months before I went into the Peace Corps.
Hmm.
And then towards the end of my experience, my mother took sick and actually died in less than 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to get home, but I really was home for almost all of those 6 weeks. And so that just set me back a little bit in terms of the program I had going. And I just had a little bit more I wanted to do, so I requested an extension. If you could prove a need to stay for a short time beyond, they would let you do that. But you had to prove that there was an end point. Because
mm-hmm.
what they really didn't want was just people hanging out.
Yeah.
In the Peace Corps.
So you went back and finished up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
I was there about another year. I was, I think I would have left in September. My mom died in April. So I went back in May and then extended through the following June. And so that took me to July 1 of 1994.
What did you like most about your experience in Jamaica? Was it the work, the people, the environment?
All of the above.
All of those things.
Good friends, people I still stay in contact with. And I loved what I was doing. It just, you know, once I got up to the university, it was just wonderful. I loved the work, I loved teaching, and it was just the perfect fit.
So then what did you do in 1994 when you got back?
When I got back, Kay, I really needed to decide if I wanted to get back into cardiology or do something different. I had, of course, just proven to myself that I could adapt and could tolerate doing something different. And actually, to be honest with you, I got sick shortly before coming home. I had, while I was in Jamaica, in addition to my role at the university, I also developed a close relationship with the Heart Association of Jamaica. And the management of that organization, I did a lot of teaching for them, and the management of that organization threw me a party about 2 or 3 weeks before I was supposed to leave, and some fish was served at that party that was tainted with a toxin that they call ciguatera. And the end of that story is that I really was sick until I ate some of that fish, and that would have been on or about June 10th, and I was really sick until October, and so I couldn't just pick up and start working.
That was quite a going away party.
Yeah. And the joke of it all, well, I had, for the Heart Association, I had participated in a heart walk.
Mm-hmm.
And for people who went over a certain number of miles, they put your name in a hat. And lo and behold, on national television, my name was picked, and I won a trip to London for 10 days, and I was to leave on that trip the Sunday afternoon after the Friday night fish party. And I was very sick, but the end of a very long story is that the only time that was right for me to do it was right then, and my reservations were made, etc. And so I did actually travel to London in a not well situation, ended up in a hospital in London for about 3 days in a tropical medicine department. Actually, they knew exactly what I was talking about and knew exactly what my syndrome was.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was sort of a miserable trip. And I came home and I had to go back by the rules of the prize. I had to return to Kingston, and I was there for about another week and a half trying to pack up and leave, and I was sick that whole while as well, and it was just a miserable experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's a neurotoxin, and it's a sodium channel blocker, and so there was a lot of weakness involved in it, and to just walk across the room, I'd have to sit down and rest.
Yeah.
It was just an incredible experience.
Can you spell
pardon me?
Can you spell the name of the toxin, the syndrome that you had again?
C-I-G-U-A-T-A-R. R-A, I think.
Is that the name of the fish or just the toxin?
No, that's the name of the toxin.
Okay.
I happen to have had a horse-eyed jack fish is what I ate. It's most commonly seen in barracuda, but about 400 species have been known to exhibit this. And it's really the medium-sized fish, the 5 to 8 pounders, that feed on the smaller fish along the reef.
Mm-hmm.
The actual toxin is actually in the algae on the reef.
Did anyone else get sick?
Yes, there were about 16 of us there, and 13 of the 16 got sick.
Wow.
Two of them ended up in the hospital. You can get pretty significant bradycardia.
So you came back to the States and pretty much had to recover from that?
I had to chill out for a while.
Yeah.
And like I say, it really was maybe late September, early October, and I got back on July 1st, that I really felt that I even had the physical energy to get myself to an interview. I did apply for a couple different positions that appealed to me. However, a friend of mine invited me to lunch one day at the local medical college and closely associated hospital. And while we were eating lunch, she recommended that I speak with the folks in the human resources department there at the Medical College of Wisconsin. And so I did. I thought I didn't have anything to lose. And that person asked me if I had ever considered bone marrow transplant, or would I consider bone marrow transplant. And in fact, about 10 or 12 years earlier, I had indeed made application to the bone marrow transplant program for a nurse research position. And they wrote back and said they felt that I was overqualified for the position. And so I just sort of let it go out of my head. But I did say yes, that I would consider that. It still struck me as somewhat interesting, and as I mentioned earlier, I really felt that I could deal with change and something brand new.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is when I got into true clinical medicine as a PA.
That was 1994.
Right.
So this was bone marrow transplant program through the Medical College of Wisconsin?
Yes.
So they hired you as a PA?
That is correct.
And what kind of work did you do?
Well, everything. The program was divided into two components, the inpatient unit and the outpatient unit. And we did a lot of primary care medicine. Well, I shouldn't say primary. I don't mean like family practice medicine. We did internal medicine because that's really what it is. And in a bone marrow transplant setting. And we followed and managed patient care for mm-hmm. both outpatients. We rotated around. Across time, the program became extremely busy. We kept adding more people, though we never had enough, it seemed. And it's just a tough, tough environment because we really do lose a lot of patients.
Yeah.
And they don't drop dead like cardiac patients. So in the meantime, they are critically ill. I think there's a sixth of the sick in the whole hospital. And we got to know all the spouses and kids and parents and friends and knew them well and bonded with them well. And it was really in that block of time, Kay, that I realized how much more satisfying that job was than when I was in cardiac surgery and we just brought them in and cut them open and closed them up.
Yeah.
And I never saw them again. And this was very, very satisfying. I was able to teach because I rather quickly adapted well and was respected early and grasped the medicine of it all, the gestalt of it all.
Mm-hmm.
And so anytime we added a person to the team, that became my responsibility to teach them. And of course, we taught a lot. Patient education was really critical, and I did a lot of patient teaching. And we were really considered an intensive care unit. and our patients were extremely sick. So, you know, if someone needed a vent, we didn't send them any place. We took care of them ourselves. Dialysis, we had, and we had people with just multi-organ problems. Mm-hmm. It truly was an in-depth internal medicine experience on people who had no white blood cells.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of infectious disease. So it was a strong component of that clinical experience.
Was it mostly leukemia, lymphoma patients, or what?
A lot. However, one of the docs that came to be our clinical director, oh, maybe 6 or 7 years ago, was into multiple myeloma. And so at one time, I think almost 50% of our cases were multiple myeloma.
Mm-hmm.
When I was starting, they were still doing a fair amount of breast cancer transplants.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were multiple studies that ultimately revealed that transplant was no better than conventional medicine for breast cancer. And so insurance companies stopped paying for it for breast cancer.
Mm.
And so, yes, leukemia, lymphoma, and multiple myeloma. Occasional testicular germ cells, tumors.
Mm-hmm. And you worked with all ages of patients?
Yeah. Well, we didn't do PEDS.
Okay.
We're closely associated with the Children's Hospital of Wisconsin, and there was a separate. There's a new regulating body for bone marrow transplant programs. It's called FACT. It's the foundation for, or the Federation for Cellular Hematopoietic Therapy. I think that's what it stands for, and they. The Children's Hospital and the Frater Hospital, which was the adult hospital, both being very closely associated with the Medical College of Wisconsin. And I was actually employed by the Medical College, but of course I spent all my time in the hospital. And so this FACT Federation organization really stressed that they wanted us to consider ourselves as much as possible a single bone marrow transplant program.
Mm-hmm.
And I was involved in writing a lot of the SOPs when we first started being reviewed by them, and it was that's when we found out how really quite different we were. But for all intents and purposes, it really is considered one program. But the pediatric component is at the Children's Hospital, mm-hmm. and I never worked for them.
Okay.
So my experience was mostly adult, but that went from about, you know, there was the occasional late teenager who really didn't want to be a patient at Children's Hospital.
Yeah.
And so probably the youngest patient I would have had would have been 17 or 18.
Mm-hmm.
All the way up to, gosh, I think we did a 75-year-old.
So one of the questions I've been asking the folks I've interviewed is if they remembered a patient that they lost and what that was like. I'm sure you have lots of stories, but...
I lost. I would have to talk to you the rest of the
time. Yeah.
I stay in touch with many of them, with the surviving members of those families, and it touched me deeply, very, very deeply. And it was always sad. In fact, to be frank with you, all of them were so sick that sometimes it was actually a relief when they died.
Yeah. And how many years were you there?
10 years. I
just
left there October 18th of last year.
Okay. Do you remember a patient in particular that really stuck out for you or that you've kept in contact with?
You know, Kay, that really is a very difficult question to answer because I felt like I bonded with really, really many, and I would probably count up to 20 or 25 to say these are people that I really felt dearly close to, and their families as well. And I can't name
one
of them.
Yeah, that's okay. So you...
I just would like to add one other thing. Is that something I learned to do quickly in that environment was to speak very openly directly and honestly with all of my patients.
Mm.
If they asked me if I thought they were going to die, and I knew that that's sort of the direction things were going.
Mm-hmm.
I was very candid with them, and I just responded. It almost brings tears to my eyes just to even talk about it.
Yeah, I'm sure it does.
I really bonded with a lot of very fine people.
And this was in Milwaukee, too, right? Did you know any of these people from your past? Because, I mean,
well,
you had lived there all your life.
That's a very interesting question. And the answer is yes. It so happened that there was a woman who I knew was somewhat older than I was, who had been a St. Mary's nurse graduate. And by total coincidence, she lived right next door to my one of my brothers and his family.
Mm-hmm.
And she was widowed very early, had three young girls, and they were teenagers when my brothers, you know, was starting to have a young family.
Mm-hmm.
And so those three girls babysat a lot for my nieces and nephews.
Mm-hmm.
And very early in my time, the middle of the three girls, developed acute leukemia. And it had been years since I had met her, but of course her mother came along with her, as did her husband when she first came to see us in consultation for transplant. And we just connected instantly, mm-hmm. reconnected instantly, I should say. And she just had a horrible course right out of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
She really did poorly, and she was, you know, like a real healthy, otherwise healthy 28-year-old or so.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so sad. She just got so sick, and it, like all of them, it took her really long to die. And I still stay in touch with her mother. So that is someone who I knew from the past.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that's happened is that there's sort of a referral base in Port Washington, which is where I grew up, and that's about 30 miles north of Milwaukee. And so there were all kinds of patients that were being referred where I knew someone from that family or actually knew the patient himself. And there were probably five or six people like that where
mm-hmm.
I knew somebody who knew them or, you know.
Right.
And that really surprised me. That's an interesting question.
So the patients that you saw, well, I guess inpatients, you saw them every day, right?
Yes. It was very intense on the inpatient unit because those people were so sick. We had a 12-bed unit, and we were so busy, we were often overflowing onto other units. The maximum number that I ever remember was 20 patients that we had scattered all over the hospital. But we always kept the sickest closest to us, and so we were constantly triaging couldn't move and who couldn't, etc. And in any event, and you couldn't leave. Were very frustrating and stressful in that way, and that's just because it was a very poorly managed department.
Mm-hmm.
And people, you know, what happened, okay, a lot, is that we would have such intense experiences with these people that those that survived all of that just sensed that their own docs didn't know as much about bone marrow transplant and that they were nervous about being taken care of people who they felt didn't understand bone marrow transplant. And so they really wanted us to be their primary caregiver.
Mm-hmm.
And that became such a problem that we really had to take some pretty strong steps to make sure that people had, you know, primary docs before we would go ahead with the transplant. Because there really had to be a day when they really had survived that we really had to let go of them and get into longer-term managed care with them through their primary people at home.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had a lot of people coming in with snivelly noses while we were trying to deal with somebody who was crashing, you know.
Right.
And And patients would call us directly, and we were just constantly being interrupted. And there was just no protection for the PAs in the outpatient setting.
So how many other PAs were there besides you?
Well, there were five of us at the time I left. It took us a while to get to that. I feel like we were always two less than we really should be.
Mm-hmm. What percentage of your patients survived?
I would say about 40%. And who survives depends on really a lot of different factors: age, primary disease, what the characteristics of that primary disease are, how fast they relapsed after their first treatment, what the cytogenetics were of their leukemias, and how much chemotherapy they had had previously, what the rest of their organ systems were like, etc.
So when they came to you, they'd already tried other
absolutely
modalities?
Yes.
Okay.
They've already been to hell and back.
Right. So how did you manage to, keep it together when you would work day in and day out with these people? I mean, I can imagine just losing it and being really emotional.
Yeah. I let myself be emotional when I really felt that way. You know, I cried a lot with families and patients themselves because, and I did that only because there were times when that felt right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean that I was slobbering all the time. But I guess I got to the point, Kay, where I thought that, God led us to do what we were trained to do. And with some patients, more than we would have liked, we got to point X, where that wasn't enough anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then I accepted the fact that a bigger force than us and our science took over, and that it was someone, a higher force's decision, or, plan to take some from us. And there were enough successes that's what kept us in the business.
Mm-hmm.
And something that was so exciting for all of us is that the nurses on the inpatient unit hosted a party each Christmas for all survivors. And that's when we would see the people coming back who, were 10 and 15 years out and had seen grandchildren being born and graduations and weddings and new births and were back to a pretty decent quality of life, etc. And that's when we knew why we were still doing that. That was medicine for us, good medicine for us.
Yeah. So do you remember what it felt like, and let me ask you this first. I'm also been asking people about when they've ever been on the other side of healthcare as the patient and how that affected the way that they practiced medicine. And I know that you were pretty sick for a while, and I wondered how that...
I knew that I was not seriously ill, and I knew that tincture of time was going to take care of that. I wasn't seriously ill. I did have a second breast biopsy during the time that I was in that clinical setting. And I felt a cold experience with one of the first docs that I saw regarding that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember being very angry that they were so insensitive and cold and callous. And my next experience as a patient was just very recently. I just had my knee replaced, and so I was in the hospital for about 5 days or so. But although it just so happens that someone from Port Washington is the chief PA in the office in which I had my orthopedic work done.
Hmm.
And so I saw her in action, as well as a partner of hers it was very clear to me that she was chief because she deserved to be. You know, she just had a wonderful manner. She did teaching and was just very appropriate. The other gal was, I don't mean to say she was trying to show off, but her personality was just very different and didn't bond as well with me as this other gal did.
Mm-hmm.
But she happened to be the sister of someone I grew up with and went mm-hmm. to school with. So it really is a small world. But I think that while I was at the hospital during the surgical event just a month ago, I feel like I was thinking more as a nurse and being a critical thinker more as a nurse mm-hmm. than as a PA. I was noticing nurse things.
Right.
More.
So what made you decide to leave the bone marrow program?
I was really burned out, Kate.
Yeah.
I just... plus, we had... there had been a new chief of the HEMONC section, and we were a subdivision within HEMONC.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a new chief, and we just sort of, I can't say we clashed, we just, I felt like he treated PAs differently than we had previously been treated.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just time. I really, 10 years was a long time to spend in such an incredibly intense arena.
Yeah, that is.
You know, our patients would just turn on a dime.
Yeah.
You had to be able to make those decisions in both the outpatient and the inpatient setting.
Yeah.
And really had multi-system problems.
So where are you going to go from here? Are you going to practice again? Or?
I don't know. I moved to a different position. Still within the Medical College of Wisconsin, and I'm technically working with the same physicians that I worked with previously, although I'm now with a bone marrow transplant research organization, and the chief MD players have dual responsibilities both to this research organization and to the clinical program, and so I worked with them previously when I was on the clinical side.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of the docs are part of this research program, but those that are, I had previously worked with
mm-hmm.
and had good working relationships with, and they actually approached me and asked if I'd be interested, and a new position was designed for me.
Wow.
And so I'm certainly not practicing clinically at this time, although they have asked me to come back a couple different times. So I had staffing trouble, but not for a long time now. I guess the point that I want to make is that the position that I have, although administrative, it really is immensely helpful for me to have had true clinical bone marrow transplant experience.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think someone without my background could easily have this position. So again, it's been sort of a good marriage.
So are you recruiting patients, or what? How do you...
No, we're research. The organization that I work for used to be called the International Bone Marrow Transplant Registry, and for about 30 years they've been collecting research data after transplant
mm-hmm.
as to transplant information and data. And we in no way designed protocols. We in no way dictated how people were transplanted. We simply collected the black and white data.
Mm-hmm.
And then so across time, we have information now on over 60,000 patients who have been transplanted. And we truly are an international organization. And members of our organization now are in about 40 countries, and we have over 500 transplant centers that we collect data from.
Mm-hmm.
And we're funded by the NIH, and so our centers get paid, albeit peanuts, they get paid for filling out data information for us. However, last summer of 2004, an affiliation occurred between the International Bone Marrow Transplant Organization and the National Marrow Donor Program, which is up in Minneapolis. And that program houses the huge database that searches for unrelated donors for patients who do not have siblings. And there's a research arm of that National Marrow Donor Program that affiliated with the International Bone Marrow Transplant Registry in July of 2004, and it is now called the Center for International Blood and Marrow Transplant Research, or CIBMTR. And when that affiliation occurred, it was determined that they wanted to become involved in what we call prospective studies. Everything they had done so far was retrospective. And so we did want to get into the business of actually designing protocols and recruiting centers that would be able to accrue patients to those protocols. And so a subcomponent of our program is Bone Marrow Transplant Clinical Trials Network. It's a multi-center approach to research protocols. You know, bone marrow transplant, as important as it is, it's a relatively small community when you think of the whole world and all medical diseases and, you know, procedures, etc. And so the feeling is, and the philosophy is, that we really need a multi-center network in order to accrue enough patients fast enough to answer specific questions about transplant. And so that's a huge piece of what I'm involved with. But it's not, I really am in a very unique administrative position. I work extremely closely with the scientific director who sort of runs the whole show. And not only do I get asked to be involved and am involved in just our little Milwaukee office, which has about 35 people in it, and I'm as involved this other, the international aspect of our organization as well, including our clinical trials network. So I do a lot of traveling with her. My actual title is Associate Director of Operations of the CIBMTR. However, as she explains it, my real job is to make her life easier. I'm still struggling to do that. So it's just shy of a year that I've been in this position.
So do you think you're going to do this for a while?
Well, I'm about to be 62, and I don't want to think about interviewing for another job in my lifetime.
Yeah.
I suspect I'll go out in this position, but I also have no immediate plans for retirement.
So to finish up, I have a few, I guess, kind of broad, esoteric kind of questions. So bear with me. I know it's hard to kind of encapsulate an answer for some of these questions, but I was wondering what you love most about being a PA.
Well, that experience I had in my bone marrow transplant time, and I loved the closeness to the patient. I loved the medicine of it. I really enjoyed the internal medicine piece. I enjoyed the infectious disease piece. I enjoyed the critical care part of it. And I love my relationships with patients and family. Did I answer that question?
You did. Thank you. I'm just kind of writing here.
No, but what was the actual question?
What you loved most about being a PA.
Okay.
Yeah. So looking...
And I, excuse me for interrupting, but no. I guess I really... It was not until I did that clinical experience that I realized that I really could practice with some independence. You know, once our docs respected us and knew what our boundaries, and we all knew what our boundaries were, they really permitted us certain freedoms and judgment. And I enjoyed that as well.
So looking back on your career, is there anything that you would do differently?
Step was important in its proper place.
So what do you think are some of the future challenges, or what? Let me ask you it this way. What do you think that we could do better as PAs?
Okay, I don't know how to answer that question. I feel like the newer kids coming out of the program, such as yourself now, mm-hmm. I think are extremely sharp and have expectations about independence different than I had. I was an old school nurse,
mm-hmm.
and so I guess I still had a lot of old school nurse in me, you know, when I first practiced. And I don't know how to answer that. I really don't, because my world was so small. You know, for the 10 years that I spent in bone marrow transplant, we didn't have a huge group. The hematology-oncology component of our program had several nurse practitioners, and they operated very differently than we did,
mm-hmm.
and had very regulated hours, 8 to 4, never any weekends. I mean, they still had residents on their services.
Mm-hmm.
We did not. Because there came a time several years ago that they really felt bone marrow transplant was just too small and too unique.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, as you would know, they wanted to be preparing more and more docs to be, you know, in an outpatient setting and leaning that direction and no longer hospital bound.
Mm-hmm.
And so we operated very, we really operated as residents would have operated.
Mm-hmm.
And we had rotating fellows on our service all the time, and we still felt we were the ones that were managing the patients.
Yeah, that were doing the most care.
But I feel real out of it because I did it so late in my life, and I haven't been exposed to really many brand new PAs. So I don't know. We would do some tutoring for Marquette University PA students, and frankly, I felt that a few of those kids that came to be with us weren't really interested in working real hard.
Mm-hmm.
But those were anecdotal situations.
Yeah.
I can't make a general statement about that.
Okay. So what's been the greatest compliment paid to you as a PA?
I guess that would be junior PAs, junior colleagues, verbalized great respect for me. And I guess I would say even something on top of that or before that were patients and patient family comments. I have a huge folder of letters, very touching letters and sentiments from patients, a few who made it, and families from many who didn't.
Mm.
That was, I think, a higher compliment to me than colleagues.
Yeah.
And I knew that my physician group respected me, and they trusted my judgment. It took me a while to get to that because I really had never been in true medicine before 1994. And I guess that's how I would reflect back on the cardiac surgery piece, is that it was just very canned. We did the same thing for all of them.
Right.
And they all, for the most part, had the same course, and they were all out of the hospital most about the same time, and, you know, had the same sort of side effects and
right.
Complications.
Pretty predictable, whereas the other population is pretty unpredictable.
Yep.
Well, that ends my list of questions.
Okay.
Thank you for being so willing and open with me. I appreciate all your responses.
That my situation has been different, Kay, because I was older when I got into the business and then had relatively brief experience in cardiac surgery, which was an arena that I had spent gobs of time in as a nurse. Then went into an administrative position and wasn't practicing medicine.
Right.
And then had sort of the time of my life, draining though it really was. I just so loved those 10 years. So that, for me, my last 10 years, truly is what was my PA experience.
Yeah.